Everything you were taught about McCarthyism is wrong, and so is the phrase naming names in front of a Senate. What you think it means is outing people out of hate and hysteria. But here's an inconvenient truth. Joseph McCarthy was right. And what's more, when you're using the term McCarthyism or naming names, you are using government-created propaganda. It's a lie. And this propaganda was created by the Democrats and the State Department. So here I am to clear his name and tell you the absolute truth about that word and the story of McCarthy. If you ask any high school student what it means, likely they'll say, well, it's baseless witch hunts that ruined innocent lives. This is a staple of American high school curriculum, right up there with the Red Scare, the Crucible. It's always framed as this cautionary tale about paranoia, not proof. Well, textbooks paint McCarthy as this reckless bully who whipped up blacklists in Hollywood and torched careers and did it all out of anti-Semitic malice. But I'm going to myth bust that, so hold on to your hats. Here are some things that we are not told about McCarthy. Number one is that he was right, and I'm going to tell you how we know this. He actually did not want to name names. He was smeared by the Democrats and the State Department in collusion. He actually had factual reports and intelligence on which to make his accusations, and he was the victim of multiple character smears, all of which I'm going to tell you the truth about. So let's start with the first one. Get ready, buckle up. First of all, he was right. History has shown that McCarthy was absolutely correct, and there were, in fact, communists infiltrating the U.S. government, specifically the State Department, at the policy level, at the highest levels. Well, how do we know this? Well, the FBI knew it all along, but the public knows because when the Soviet Union fell in the 90s, they gave us proof. This proof is called the Venona Decrypts or the Venona Files. It is a trove of intercepted Soviet communist communications that the U.S. intelligence had been decoding for years, in fact, for decades. The Venona Files revealed that hundreds of Americans were secretly working with or for the Soviet intelligence, many of them inside the U.S. government, including the State Department, the Treasury, and even the White House. Here are some names that were confirmed in the Venona Files: Alger Hiss, a top State Department official who helped create the United Nations, Harry Dexter White, Assistant Secretary of the U.S. Treasury under FDR, Lachlan Lurie, an advisor to President Roosevelt, Julius and Ethel Rosenberg, who passed atomic secrets to Moscow, one of the more famous cases. Now, the only one here directly named by McCarthy on this list was Harry Dexter White. He was named in the famous 1950s Wheeling speech. He died of a heart attack just few days after denying under oath that he was a Soviet agent, but that was a lie. He is, in fact, confirmed in the Venona Files as a confirmed Soviet source. The others here, Alger Hiss was exposed by Whitaker Chambers, not McCarthy. Lachlan Lurie was part of a broader network of espionage that McCarthy did reference, but he was not specifically focused on him. The Rosenbergs were prosecuted by the Justice Department, not McCarthy, so I should be clear. But all of these validate McCarthy's assertion that there were Soviet spies in the U.S. government. Now, I should point out the FBI knew this all along. The FBI had the Venona transcripts as well as treasure troves of documents, files and files and files. And in fact, we know that they knew this as early as 1942 because they were investigating Oppenheimer, the father of the atomic bomb. We know this, that he had been investigated as a secret party member. Now, why, you might ask, did McCarthy stand on a limb by himself if the FBI knew that what he was saying was correct? Well, partly because the intel that they had was classified. They were still working these files at the time. And partly because they didn't think that McCarthy would need their help. McCarthy wasn't actually doing these investigations himself. He was asking for investigations, which were in fact happening. And there was no way that the FBI at the time could have known that the Democrats were going to attempt to smear McCarthy, which at the time was so unprecedented, and I'm going to show you this. But it is true that by 1950, when the McCarthy hearings began, the president and the State Department had already been given volumes of information proving that Russian spies were working in the State Department, and they did nothing about it, which is another broader question. Why did that happen? This brings me to my point about McCarthy not wanting to name names. This is my second point. Now, the narrative is that he named names before the Senate. But in fact, the truth is that when he was called in for these hearings, he had barely began his presentation when Democratic Senator Scott Lucas demanded that he name names. So McCarthy came prepared with these accusations as only file numbers, anonymous file numbers, case one, case two, so on. He had said repeatedly that he was not prepared to name names publicly in front of the TV cameras, but the Democrats pushed him. Here is when he first began his speech, and Senator Lucas said, "I want him to name those communists. The senator is privileged to name them all in the Senate, and if those people are not communists, the senator will be protected." He said, all the communists he's going to name, I want to remain here until he names them. So there are many exchanges like this where Democrats push and push and push, and McCarthy repeatedly refuses to name names. He says, I will hand these names over in closed-door sessions. That is on the record many times. Here is just one of those times where he says, this is a quote from McCarthy, which you will not find if you look it up on YouTube, but it is in the record. He says, the names are available. The senators may have them if they care for them. I think, however, it would be improper to make the names public until the appropriate Senate committee can meet in executive sessions and get them. I have approximately 81 cases. I do not claim to have any tremendous investigative agency to get the facts, but if I were to give all the names involved, it might leave the wrong impression. If we should label one man a communist when he is not a communist, I think it would be too bad. However, the names are here. I should be glad to abide by the decision of the Senate after it hears the cases. But I think the sensible thing to do would be to have an executive session and have a proper committee go over the whole situation. He didn't want to. We have many exchanges like this where he says over and over, I do not want to do this. And he never claimed to have conducted investigation himself. He was a senator, not a prosecutor. His aim at showing up for these hearings at all was to ask the Justice Department and the State Department to investigate these things. But once he named names, most of the accused were brought to testify. They denied everything and were promptly cleared by the Democratic-controlled committee, often without further inquiry. Many were never seriously investigated at all. In fact, some just walked free on nothing more than a denial, despite credible questions about their records. So this idea that McCarthy named names, that's a smear. That was a trap that he walked into. He resisted doing so many times. It was the Democrats who demanded that he name names publicly, pressuring him under the guise of transparency, and then turning around and weaponizing that disclosure against them. So they laid the trap, he walked into it. So how many innocent people were dragged into this? We can't really know, since so many of them just asserted their innocence and then walked away. The system clearly wasn't interested in the truth. They were interested in discrediting McCarthy. And there is evidence that that is what happened. And I move on to this next myth. We're all feeling it. Costs are still rising. Inflation is slowing, but still a thing. Prices are still going up. So you think, well, should I call American Financing to refinance and pay off this credit card debt that I'm living off of? But then you second guess yourself because the low mortgage rate that you have. But obviously, when you evaluate your debt, if you're paying super high interest in one place and low interest in another, you're never going to build yourself out of debt and into financial freedom. The math doesn't work out. Let American Financing show you that with their tools that will teach you this product that wealthy people do all the time, which is leverage assets and build instead of continuing to dig into the red. Because again, if you're only making minimum payments on that bad debt, you're not going anywhere. You're basically treading water. So you owe it to your family to learn this trick and see what's possible. There's no upfront fees, no pressure. They're just going to teach you this. Call them at 866-890-8434. Again, that's 866-890-8434, or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. Commit to spending the time to studying this. See if it works for your family, and then you can build wealth. Again, 866-890-8434, or head on over to AmericanFinancing.net/redacted. The smear campaign was run very intentionally by this man here, Millard Tydings. He was a Democratic senator from Maryland. He threatened to play a speech that McCarthy had made in West Virginia at the hearings, but it was pure theater. There was never a recording of that speech. It was mysteriously erased. Tydings colluded with the State Department. He later admitted under congressional testimony that he didn't even have that speech. He was just threatening it for the cameras. Now, Tydings colluded with the State Department to smear McCarthy in these hearings, and there is proof of that. In fact, the magazine Newsweek covered this smear campaign extensively in 1950, although the archives are nearly impossible to find online. They exist. Tydings convened meetings with the State Department's own lawyers with the aim of, according to Newsweek, the total and eternal destruction of McCarthy. Now, let that sink in for a second. The State Department was allowed to interfere in an investigation of itself, helping Democrats engineer a smear campaign against the one man who was calling for accountability publicly. And that's then where we get the term McCarthyism. They came up with it. So how can we use this when it is, like the term conspiracy theory, was used to discredit those asking questions? Conspiracy theory itself is a conspiracy. So is McCarthyism. So let's move on. Where did McCarthy actually get his information, if not from the FBI? Well, from the U.S. State Department itself. In August of 1946, a State Department official named Samuel Klaus wrote a classified 106-page memo flagging over 120 U.S. employees as security risks. This internal document directly informed Truman's 1947 loyalty program and later McCarthy's 1950 speeches. Now, here's something odd about that memo, though. It has since disappeared from public record. The author of this fantastic book called Blacklisted by History, which is a fantastic read. It almost reads like a spy novel, but it's real. Creation of American Propaganda. M. Stanton Evans, he went looking for it, and the Klaus memo is missing from public record. He looked in the National Archives. He looked in the Tydings Panel Archives. He found a notice of where the memo had been, but it was withdrawn in 1993. So this important information, this important document that informed the McCarthy hearings is gone. That's weird, right? But McCarthy definitely read it, and that is what prompted him to act, speak publicly about the need for investigation and communist infiltration into the U.S. government. As a senator, that's kind of what you would hope they would do. See weird things, call for government investigation. It is also useful, though, that Democrats went on to smear his character. And here are just a few things that they used to smear his name, which are not true. The first thing, they called him un-American. Well, you be the judge of that. I would like you to know about his background. He was one of seven children from a hardworking family in Wisconsin, and he had to work several jobs as a teenager. So he did not get to complete high school at age 18 when normal teenagers do. So at the age of 20, he enrolled in an accelerated course to finish high school, and he finished in 9 months. He went on to get a law degree, and then he ran for office as a local judge, and he won, becoming the youngest judge in Wisconsin at that time, 1939. Then came the draft, which he would have been exempt from because he was a sitting judge, but he gave up his position and enlisted voluntarily anyway. He joined the Marines in World War II. He flew combat missions in the Pacific and earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. When he came home, he was easily elected as senator, earning himself the title of youngest senator in the country at the age of 38. So again, if you would like to call him un-American, well, you be the judge. Someone who volunteers to go to war when there's a draft, is that un-American? Another character smear is that he created this Hollywood blacklist where actors and producers couldn't get any roles or any work because they were suspected communists. The fact is, McCarthy had nothing to do with that. It was Hollywood executives that did that themselves. The blacklist began in 1947 under what's called HUAC, the House Un-American Activities Committee, and it was enforced by studio executives themselves years before McCarthy ever had a single Senate hearing, so that doesn't hold up. And often you might hear him called an anti-Semite. These assertions came about because most of the communist spies were in fact Jewish, but he did not specifically target Jews, and in fact he didn't even come up with the list himself. The State Department did, so the fact that they happened to be Jewish had nothing to do with his intentions. He was looking for Russian communists. And in fact, McCarthy's chief counsel, Roy Cohn, was a Jew who helped root out these communists. There's no record of McCarthy ever specifically going after Jews or making any anti-Semitic statements. That label stuck because it was useful, not fact-based. So given these facts, why do you think we still use the term McCarthyism? And who does? Well, I think you might know that McCarthyism is mostly used by the left because many of the individuals that were in fact caught in pro-Soviet networks were intellectuals, artists, and bureaucrats aligned with the left. So labeling this scrutiny as McCarthyism helps protect historical allies, discredit whistleblowers, and preserve the moral authority of progressive institutions. Also, attacking the source and not the actual evidence presented has become a useful tactic now used in Senate hearings by both sides, we should be clear, the right and the left. When they don't want to hear something that's presented to congressional meetings, they go after the person presenting it. That's not new now, but it was new back then. And in fact, Democrats went after him so completely that when the summary of the hearings were published after the McCarthy hearings wrapped up, not only did Democrats mysteriously leave out dozens of pages, which included Republicans' objections to many of the committee's conclusions, they also had this summary of what happened, which used extreme language to frame the hearings as this hit on McCarthy, which at the time was very unusual. Evans says that this memo had these scathing accusations of McCarthy himself: hoax, fraud, deception, nefarious, vile, big lie, distortion, half-truth, untruth, despicable, bias, sinister, totalitarianism. You might find this recognizable in the way that current politicians use the term misinformation. At the time, this was nascent, that committees did not just smear other members in order to push aside something they didn't want to see. And sadly, now this is a common tactic, probably because it worked so well. It proves that the main purpose of the McCarthy hearings was only to smear McCarthy, not get to the truth, which now is incontrovertible, that the U.S. government was actually infiltrated. Anti-communist efforts were not just hysterical, they were founded, and McCarthy had legitimate targets. And again, it wasn't the people himself that he was after. He wanted the government to launch investigations. He wanted to keep the people's names out of it. But now, sadly, when politicians use the term McCarthyism, they just sling around propaganda. This was government propaganda, turning the accuser into the accused. And they invoke McCarthyism as a warning sign against state overreach, which obviously is valid in most contexts, but they ignore the real subversion that did exist. And it's such a useful lie. It lets those in power rewrite history, discredit investigations, and brand their opponents as paranoid fanatics. And even when these opponents are pointing to documented truth. So if we're serious about learning about history, we owe it to ourselves to separate myth from fact and call propaganda by its name. So we shouldn't use these terms: McCarthyism, naming names, even conspiracy theorists. These are things that the government does to subvert our curiosity, and we should reject it. And perhaps we even, instead of McCarthyism, we should use this. Millard Tidings was the guy who started it. We could use tidyism. Tidyism. I just made that up. I don't know if that works. Is you're trying to subvert real questions. Tidyism. I don't know. You want to use that? Let's start a hashtag. So let me know what you think of this. This is true. I'm trying to myth bust right now government propaganda. Let me know what you think. Were you taught this in high school? I bet you weren't. And the next time someone accuses you of McCarthyism, you can say thank you because that guy was right.